This is the Roaring Elephant podcast, the trendiest of trends, the hypiest of hypes,
the innovatiest of innovations.
The most, I forgot what the other axis was. The most interesting of interests.
Indeed.
It's not just saying that. I mean, it's not just us. AI says that too.
Yeah, sure.
Because AI says everything hallucinating. So,
And so does McKinsey. Not hallucinating. Well, maybe not.
Well, Who knows? Maybe the report that we're looking at has been written partially by AI, so they might just be.
I mean, I think that image at the top is probably generated by AI. But anyway, we are, continuing our little discussion around some of the trends from this McKinsey report, talking about the differences between things in 2019 and 2023, and positing where we think they will be at the end of 2024. So we covered the obvious one of generative AI last episode, and now it's perhaps less hype ridden, but probably more valuable cousin, applied AI.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing for me that makes my hair stand on end a little bit is that apparently we can't call AI AI anymore because everybody thinks AI is just Gen AI. So regular AI has now gotten its own name by McKinsey, Applied AI.
I'm fine with that.
No, that's like a USB consortium making USB 3 five times with the same name meaning something else. That's not how tech works. That makes me mad.
Except it is.
I know.
So this is back to the AI as you know it before 2019. Yes. Typical kind of machine learning,
anomaly detections, all that
prediction,
good stuff.
Exactly.
Actually, thing that works,
stats, statistics, and mathematics. Yes, exactly. All wrapped up in a pretty computer bow. So yeah, this is kind of so interesting. Contrast here is that back in 2023. The equity investment in generative AI was $36 billion. The equity investment in applied AI was $86 billion, so more than double. My guess would be, I do think applied AI will have continued its upward trend, but I think it will be absolutely blown away by the investment / hype in generative AI will have absolutely trounced this.
Yeah, I mean, you should compare it with blockchain, which for some reason isn't part of this report. Who'd have thought that blockchain wasn't a trend anymore? But same thing, right? The hype just works that way.
Yeah.
Now, looking at the little graph there, where it goes from 2019, which has 50% innovation and 23% interest, skyrocketing upwards to 100% innovation, and pretty a much. Little bit more to the left, like 50%-ish interest. I think it makes sense. Innovation has been steadily going on. These models are getting better. Technology is being added. So that's definitely happening. And don't forget that Gen AI actually is part of this. But let's not. interest being 50% also makes sense because the hype around this has very much died down at this point. So only people that are actually doing something with this have interest in this. And a lot of people haven't already understood. We should just let other people do this and consume what every day did. And if you can use it, leverage it. If it's built in, sure, why not? But it's not something that we are particularly looking at. So that does make sense. The question I have for you is, if you look at the line here, it kind of looks like it went from 0-0 sometime to the position in 2019 to the position in 2023. Do you think that missing part is actually a straight line? Or is it also something that goes a little bit more wacky than a straight line?
Let's see. Pre-2019 AI. I don't think it was a straight line. I think that pre-2019 was probably where we are now with generative AI almost. So I think I think the curve had a huge like scoop out to the right-hand side and then a course correction as it sort of came back and like the hype died off, but actually the utility, the usability and the impact then started to grow up. So I think we're almost along the lines of where that was. I don't think that I was going to say I don't think that the hype was as hypey for AI as it is for generative AI.
Oh, yes. Now, predictive maintenance, well, personalized advertising. Come on.
I know. But I'm trying to think back. And my memory is terrible anyway, so this is not good. But I'm trying to think back. And I agree that all of those things are true, and there was a lot of hype, there's a lot of AI washing that went on, but I don't think that AI as was back then really captured what I would call like the general public's interest in the way that generative AI has, you know, the ability to generate, you know, an AI cat picture of a cat playing in the sand with a bucket on its head or whatever. Like just that immediate, you don't need to understand technology to be able to use it. I think like that to me is what has rotated Gen AI hype / on this graph interest, just that extra bit beyond what, you know, traditional AI, applied AI, however you want to think about it.
Yeah, I can agree to that. I mean, Gen AI has zero barrier of entry today, while applied AI, as I call it here, has a definite barrier of entry. You need to know what you're doing and so on. So that's true. But I do think that the hype makers, which typically are the hyperscalers, did at least as much, but for a less big audience when they talked about AI, because one of the whole thing was that you have to go to cloud, but you're not going to buy a GPU system, which you're going to use once a month to train your models. Now you're going to do this in the cloud. So one of the early drivers, perceived or real, to go to cloud was AI is available there. Infrastructure can be spun up and used and discarded and not needed anymore. So that was definitely something that hyperscalers did, and Google, Amazon, and Microsoft definitely. I mean, I was at Microsoft at this time, so I was a solution architect for data and AI. I mean, they had specific solution architects for data and AI, so the hype was real, definitely. But yes, you're right. Barrier of entry definitely has an effect on how widespread the interest is. And it would actually be, the thing is, of course, McKinsey does a survey and they write to people, and then these percentages are percentage of respondents. I don't think they've written to everybody, but they've written to technology, businesses, partners, influencers, people. So while you're right, I think these little graphs would have had the same kind of right way. Blowing going on for applied AI before 2019.
Yeah.
Does it also mean that something that has a lot of hype cannot be innovative, because it needs to be past the hype before innovation can actually happen?
I mean, I think they use the word innovation here in a very specific way. Yeah. So generally speaking, I would say no. I think in the way that innovation is scored in this particular report, I would say probably yes, because you just need to figure out a whole bunch of like generally like a bunch of fun, wacky, crazy stuff with a new technology before you actually find its sweet spot, before you get to, because I think the way that they score innovation here is more about, I mean, almost like mass market adoption and getting value out of it, which when you've got something very early with a lot of hype, usually I think the hype is where people are almost trying to find out what the value is. They don't really know yet. They know they've got something cool. They know they've got something exciting. They know it's going to be powerful, but they just don't really know how, where, why. There's lots of potential, but until people kind of get to that point of starting to head towards maturity, I don't think you'll get to that point where it's delivering real value at scale, mass market. Maybe?
Well, for once, I'll be a bit more cynical than you. Almost never happens. But I think it actually is true that if something is hyped, innovation gets stalled because innovation is hard and costs money and effort. As long as the big vendors can sell something purely on hype, which today is very much the case on GenAI, why would you put in the effort? You can sell it anyway. It's only when the hype dies down, then you actually have to start proving value and actually showing people, yes, see, this is something that you can. So I do think hype is necessary on the one hand to form a basis for demand so that you can go to the next step. If you don't have any hype, okay, GenAI hype is overblown, but everything new, EVs, electrical vehicles, Tesla, whatever you want to think about the company or the persons, they created a hype for electrical cars. Yep. And if that hadn't happened, the world would look differently today. Yeah. Not a lot if I look outside, because EVs are very rare here still. But still, you need a bit of hype to get there. But as long as it's still hype, you do have a barrier on the perceived need to actually innovate, because just being cool is enough.
So when we were talking about kind of generative AI, we talked about the fact that, you know, generative AI is definitely one of the spaces to get into if you're looking for, you know, a career path for the next, I don't know, let's say 10 years or so. And we talked about, and when you were talking about applied AI, you were talking about the fact that, you know, the hyperscalers, the cloud providers were big kind of pushers of traditional AI. One of the things I was thinking about when you mentioned that around generative AI is that, yes, there's a huge amount of opportunity in the generative AI world right now. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge number of companies all popping up all over the place. There's a huge number of companies adopting and including generative AI in what they do in different ways, shapes, and forms. But I do think that, you know, you mentioned about the bubble popping. I do think that, like, not all of these companies, organizations, experiments with generative AI will end up succeeding. Like, there will end up being a number of dominant players as the market matures. And so I was trying to think back again, because this feels like a little bit of, like, we've seen this before with AI previously. What were the organizations that didn't make it through the AI journey to its now the relatively high level, generally speaking, of maturity that applied AI has?
Well, those that make it, we don't remember, of course, but I think, okay, let me speak out. None of them made it, because some of them had an idea they couldn't build, or some was totally crazy, and those rightfully died. The ones that actually did have something useful got gobbled up by bigger entities like the hyperscalers and things like that. So, and yeah, I know the company I work for, we have a component for AI, regression and so on, and that came from an acquisition from a small team of people that built something kind of cool, and it was the software, the concepts and the software were integrated, and the people were also added to it. So I don't think you'll have a lot of companies out there today that were in the full AI bubble that still exist on their own. The only one I can think of, and I think it's a bad example, is Cloudera. Now, Cloudera was not an AI company, it was a data company. The other one is Databricks. Databricks is based on Spark, typical standard AI, pure sang, so that's basically it. So they're still standing on themselves, although I have been told they're very dependent on Microsoft now due to the integration with Azure. But those are kind of the only two names, and I'm probably missing a couple. I mean, there's probably still a bunch of niche companies out there that I have never heard of and never will, that are doing all of this innovation which you are seeing happening here. But we see now in this day and age, and that's different from 2019 and definitely earlier, that the moment a small company becomes successful, they get grabbed.
Yeah, so I think that I was thinking about this myself as I was asking you the question, because I also don't really know the answers. I agree with you that, yeah, Databricks and Spark, I would say, like, that's one of the successes.
And that's more successful the community of Spark than Databricks itself, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I would also say that, I mean, the only other company I can think purely in this space that I don't know, I wouldn't call them huge successes. They're still around, but I wouldn't necessarily say much more than that is kind of H2O. They're still knocking around. And they very much are of this applied AI sort of focus. But then, yeah, you went the direction that I was also thinking about, which was the data companies that tried the big, like, let's call them what they are, the big data companies that all tried to pivot towards becoming AI companies. So, you know, there was the big trio, MapR, Hortonworks, Cloudera. Obviously, MapR folded up. Like, they, I think they might, maybe they got bought up by private equity. I think, yeah, maybe they got acquired by private equity. Something like that. But they basically, like, faded completely out of relevance. Obviously, Hortonworks and Cloudera merged under the Cloudera brand. Cloudera is still around today. And both Hortonworks, as was, and Cloudera at the same time, were both really desperately trying to pivot into becoming AI companies. But I really don't, like, even post-merger, from still a handful of people I know there, I just don't see them around the space, don't really see them mentioned in that way.
Oh, Cloudera the Cloudera Workbench. I mean, if I'd say something, Cloudera has ditched all of big data and is pivoted 100% to machine learning now.
Yeah, I know that's been their their internal push and the push for their products, but I don't see them in the AI space, the general AI space. I mean, I don't know.
And why would you? Because AI, if it's applicable to whatever product or software you're running, is built in these days.
Exactly.
There's only a couple of people that want to do something very specific. And that's also you see in the McKinsey report. The job postings difference from 22 to 23 is minus 29%. So in a year time, a quarter less job openings. And that basically means there's less companies doing stuff with it.
Yeah. As you say, like, it's become more built in, it's become more standard. It's frankly, it's become a lot more mainstream than it was. Doesn't mean it's still not hard. Like, doesn't mean that, you know, if you want to do something specific, you don't still need kind of, you know, data scientists and that sort of thing. But it's become
stabilized.
So,
and the company will have one data scientist and a couple of data engineers, and that'll do nicely. You don't need whole incubator teams to figure out what this thing can do, because you're past the hype cycle.
Indeed. Well,
do we move on to the next one? What's the time?
I don't think we do. I think once more we've talked our way out.
Well, you have to finish it off, because it's your turn to do the ending.
I do indeed. I just didn't know if there was anything else you wanted to say, but it seems like there isn't. So in that case, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a patron. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, see the pretty graphs, and do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And please send us any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org via the good old email. Until next time, my name is I Love a Good Graph, Dave.
And my name is Standard Human AI, Hill.
We look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.